Welcome to the Sermon Podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode. My name is Chris. If we've not met yet, thank you for being here this morning. And it is bizarre that we're just a few days away from Christmas and the celebration of Christmas, Christmas Eve services, all of these things. And we've been talking about Christmas over the last few weeks. We've been preaching on it, and we've been talking about it a little bit of a different lens than maybe we have in the past. We've been trying to look at it through this lens of, is it possible that we could miss out on the meaning and the wonder and the beauty of Christmas because we are celebrating the season of Christmas? Is it possible that we're losing focus? Are there threats? And so we've been looking at the villains of the Christmas story. And that word villain, we've used it kind of a number of different ways. We talked about Herod. Herod was a literal villain. He was a murderous, crazy king who killed everyone who was a threat, including family members, spouses, sons, strangers. Last week, we talked about the innkeeper, this innkeeper from the nativity play that we're so familiar with, and how the innkeeper himself may not be a threat in the way that we maybe imagine, but the idea of how much space we've made in our lives, how much busyness we've taken on, the prioritization or maybe misprioritization of our time, especially in this Christmas season. And then we're going to continue with that today. Do you guys know what the number one most desired gift of the last 3 years has been at Christmas? I'm going to tell you in a couple minutes. But I appreciate the fastest buzzer response time. You would crush it on Family Feud. So do you guys remember maybe the favorite Christmas gift that you have ever gotten? Is there one that stands out? Anybody remember? Yes, Rick?
Drum set.
Drum set. Boombox. I know your age. In the back. Realistic walkie-talkies. That was last year you got those, Art? I'm just kidding. Yes?
A keyboard, which I never knew how to play.
Okay. Okay. I like it. I like it. Still waiting to be unwrapped. I think I've told this story before. The gift that will just forever be etched in my mind as the biggest surprise gift, the most meaningful gift, was when I was 11. I got a drum set, and I'd wanted to play drums for years. Every time we were at church that had a drum set, I would always just like ask after service if I could go up and play the drums, which every drummer loves when children play on their drums. So. But our family, we didn't have very much, and there was just no way. I knew how much drums cost, and so there was no way in my mind that that would ever be a thing. And so when I came out on that Christmas morning and there was a drum set there, it was mind-blowing and thrilling and exciting. And it was not only because the gift itself was awesome, but it was something about how meaningful it was. There was a sense of, you know how much I've wanted this. My parents knew how much I wanted it. There was a sense of the effort gone through to get it and to hide it and to keep it a secret and all these different types of things. And so there was just this really deep kind of surprise. I was shocked. I felt known. Over the years, there's been times that I've even given meaningful gifts. And maybe you guys, you've given someone a gift for Christmas that you, it stands out. You know, there's times I've given my kids gifts and their eyes light up in this way. I mean, there's some gifts, everybody likes to unwrap gifts, but then there's some gifts that are like, oh, that one, that was a hit. That one was the one. They're excited. They're going to remember that one. And there's just this thing around giving gifts, especially at Christmas. It's such a gift-centric time. Some of us may have gifts that we are excited to give people this year, something that you know is going to be the perfect fit, something creative or funny or meaningful, something that they said months ago that you stored away. Some of you guys are really good at remembering these little details, and then it'll just be like this beautiful surprise at just a specific moment. And if you're anything like me, if you haven't found that perfect gift for someone, usually what I do is I just start buying more and more gifts. It's like the shotgun method approach, like maybe one of these will be a hit. It's not necessarily that I've found the perfect quality gift, so just the quantity maybe will overwhelm them. And I'm not alone. There's a lot of people, I think a lot of Americans in our culture, there's this massive increase in buying gifts, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's kind of this idea of, like, hopefully one of these things is thrilling. Hopefully one of these gifts is awesome. Hopefully one of these gifts will make them feel loved. One of these random things that I have bought on Amazon, because it'll get here in time, will make them feel deeply known and cared for. And so here we have the third villain of Christmas, and we're taking a little bit of creative freedom here with this idea of villains. But the third villain of Christmas is the gifts that the wise men brought. It's not the wise men, and it's really not even their specific gifts, but just bear with me here. The third villain of Christmas is our obsession with gifts, our obsession with the things, the items. The wise men, kind of like the innkeeper, which we talked about last week. If you were here last week, you remember there's not actually an innkeeper in the Bible. It doesn't say anything about the innkeeper. It doesn't say they were grumpy or angry or mean. It just says that there was no lodging for Joseph and Mary. And so the innkeeper, as we kind of understand and imagine, is something that it's basically just come from our own kind of Christmas lore. The wise men, there's a lot that the Bible doesn't say about them also. You know, it doesn't actually say that there were three wise men. It doesn't really say who they were. It doesn't really give many specifics. It says that they brought three gifts. They traveled far, most likely from Persia. And a lot of historians and theologians say that they had memorized these prophecies and these scriptures. They would date it back to when Daniel was actually alive and in this kingdom. And so they had held on to some of these teachings. And so it tells us a little bit. There's some type of philosopher or astronomer, some type of royalty. They knew these prophecies, and generations had been waiting for these prophecies to come true. And so they traveled to worship this newborn king. We're going to read Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. It says, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from the eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. And King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem, if you remember, because that meant he was going to go crazy again and go on a killing spree. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? In Bethlehem in Judea, they said, for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd for my people Israel. And it's interesting because when these wise men that had traveled thousands and thousands and thousands of miles to come to find this newborn king, this Messiah. Do you know what scriptures they used? The same ones that Herod all of a sudden was like, hey, is there something that we should be aware of? Is there some sort of roadmap or plan of where this Messiah is supposed to be born? And so he brings out his priests and his religious leaders to help kind of track down the information that the Magi had already discovered. It says, then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. And then he told them, go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. When you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too, which was obviously not the plan. After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It says, when they saw the child, they bowed down, worshipped, and gave him these gifts. Now, these weren't random gifts. This wasn't things that they were re-gifting from a white elephant exchange. These were deeply intentional and meaningful gifts. They were symbolic. And actually, last December, we did a teaching series on what each of these gifts represented, but I'll give you the cliff notes. The gift of gold is symbolic of royalty. And it was this gift that was meaning you are the newborn king. You're not just a baby. You are not just a spiritual savior, but you are a king who is meant to be followed, who will rule. The gift of frankincense is actually an incense that they would burn oftentimes in the temple. They would burn incense, and it was this aroma that was not only smelled good, but it was symbolic of worship and God's presence and the Spirit and all these different things. And the high priest would burn this incense in the temple. And so this gift of frankincense wasn't just because that stable might have smelled a little bit and they needed some help. It was because Jesus would be our high priest, which is a different thing for us to think about sometimes. But really, a high priest was like a bridge between a holy, perfect creator and his children. A high priest would almost take the hands of us and the hands of the Father and place them together. The high priest was such a beautiful and important role, and is such a beautiful, important role that Jesus fulfills still today. And then myrrh is an interesting one. Myrrh was used for a lot of different things, but its primary use was actually as an ointment for people that were wounded. And so it's a little bit of an interesting gift to give to a newborn baby. But again, these are meaningful, symbolic gifts. And it was this picture of the journey that Jesus had ahead in his life, a journey of being beaten and tortured and crucified. It was this three gifts that were given to him that had this deep meaning, this deep significance, this deep intentionality. And most cultures have a gift bringer of some sort that they reference during the winter. Santa Claus, Father Christmas. In France, they have Le Père Noël. Some cultures have one they call Old Man Frost, which is my new favorite. Saint Nick. In Italy, it's Babbo Natale. There's all of these different gift givers that so many cultures have during this winter season, during this Christmas season. And they are all kind of find their root, they find their source in these in this story about the wise men. All of them kind of can be tracked back to these gift bringers in the Christmas story. The Magi brought extravagant and meaningful gifts for Jesus. And we in 2023 seem to be doing our very best to one-up them in our gift-giving for each other. Some statistics. These are all from the last year. These are all new statistics. Californians are projected to spend $1,732.14 per capita on Christmas gifts this year. You got to get friends with some of these other Californians. A third of Americans took an average of $1,550 of holiday debt last year. A third of Americans took debt out to buy gifts for holiday, for Christmas. One out of every four Americans is still paying off that debt from last year's Christmas gifts in 2022. In 2022, Americans spent $586 billion with a B, dollars, on gifts, and $247 billion on decorations, cards, and food. It's a lot of money. And in the last 3 years, as I said, I asked the question, the over 50% of people, this is the thing that they said they hoped to receive for Christmas, 21, 22, and 23. This is the thing over 50% of people hope to get for Christmas. Gift cards. Yeah. Because why would you leave anything to your aunts and uncles to decide what to buy for you? There is this, it's fascinating. We're spending more money than ever, and the thing that people want the most is gift cards, which is just a really polite way of saying, just give me money. Just give me the cash. But you can't say that, so it's, oh, a gift card. And, you know, I get it. Gift cards are great, but I just think it's worth noting the massive amount of money that we are spending, more than ever before, the massive amount of money that we're still trying to pay off from 12 months ago when we did this. And we're not even really buying meaningful gifts most of the time. We're just buying stuff. We're just giving people something. Here's $25 on a gift card. Here's $50 on a gift card. Here's some stuff. I hope that something in here is what you like. Or at best, you can return it. Here's a gift receipt, and you can get what you really want. It's an interesting thing when you think about the gifts and this season and all that it comes all that comes along with it. And there's nothing wrong at all with gift giving, but gift buying has become an increasingly large focus for us and an increasingly large focus of this season. And I have to wonder, how did we move from giving such deeply meaningful and symbolic gifts to just trying to give as many as we can? To just trying to make sure that we check off all of the names on the list that need a gift from us. Ultimately, it comes down to this idea of consumerism. It's a preoccupation with consuming more and more goods and merchandise and stuff and services. It's focused on having the latest and buying the best and getting the most. It's making sure that you have the newest model every year of everything. And we're kind of convinced in this idea that the stuff that we get for ourselves, or maybe the stuff that we give to others, that it has our identity wrapped up into it, that it somehow defines our worth or our value or our meaning. Consumerism whispers this lie that things will bring you satisfaction, wholeness, and identity. The reality is that consumerism is the default attitude of most of us. There is this kind of sense of, how do I make sure that I matter best in the gifts that I give? I mean, who doesn't want to be like the fun uncle or aunt or friend that gives the best gifts? You want to be the person that's able to wow people with what you're able to do. And there's this sense of, even in giving gifts, not even just in the way that we buy things for ourselves, but even in giving gifts, that somehow my worth or my identity is wrapped up in what I'm able to give someone at the Christmas season. We're kind of convinced that the stuff we consume or buy or purchase will make us feel a certain way. Like they'll bring us some sort of happiness as we consume them, but they're really shaping us. One writer said, like salt water, as we indulge in consumerism, we only grow thirstier. And like a drug, each hit of consumerism has a diminishing impact. Christmas 2023 has to be bigger than 2022, which has to be bigger than 2021. And I think that, you know, it's easy to talk about this in this sense of like, oh, I'm spending such a large quantity of dollars on these gifts, and that's what Chris is talking about. And I don't want it to be limited to, it is maybe that. But it's also not just that. How many of us feel like, I don't have the money or the resources to give good gifts this year? I wish that I had enough money to give the best gifts, because somehow in giving the fancy or expensive or the whatever types of gifts, that will communicate the value or love or meaning. We don't have to just be able to buy the nice stuff to be stuck in this lie that what we're able to give defines our meaning. Maybe even more of us on the other side wrestle with, if I could only give something meaning, if I only had the dollars, so let me get the credit card. Let me spend the next 12 months paying off the gifts that I bought this year. It's this trap that we fall into. You don't find the term consumerism in the Bible, but Jesus definitely speaks to this. In Luke chapter 12, he actually gives two kind of warnings. He says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life doesn't consist in an abundance of possessions. It's like a double warning. Watch out and be on your guard. It is so easy to fall into this idea, this trap of assuming. And it's crazy. Let's just pause for a second and think about the people that he's talking to. The people that, by all accounts, we would assume have nothing. The people that wore Birkenstocks all the time. Can you imagine? The people that might have had a nice robe along with their everyday robe. The people that maybe didn't even have garages for their horses. I mean, as we think about what they had in that time and what Jesus was speaking to them, it would be insane for us to even try and compare. And even for at that point in time, Jesus is saying, be careful, because you will be tempted to believe that what you're able to consume or collect or achieve or gather together you will think that that is somehow going to give you meaning or value or priority or importance. And that is a trap you have to be on guard for. And if it was true then, it has to be true for us today. An abundance of possessions. You have to watch out for this. The great irony of Christmas in many ways is that to follow Jesus is to commit to living a life where you give. It is actually all about giving. It's almost never about buying, but it's always about this mindset of how do I give? How do I speak truth and love? How do I give of myself? How do I share what I have? How do I give of my time? How do I slow down enough to notice the people in the crowd around me? How do I give of myself by sitting at a table with people that are nothing like me? To follow Jesus is to say, I'm going to live a life where I am giving constantly. The giving isn't the issue. It's about this other stuff that gets wrapped up in it. We have to watch out for the villain of consumerism, because Christmas for many simply means shopping and debt and wish lists rather than a celebration of God come near. And if you focus on things, you will miss out on people. If you focus on the stuff that you're trying to buy, there is like this stress and frustration and almost like at some point you just kind of throw your hands up in the air. It's like, I don't know, just get them something. I don't even care anymore. Just give them something to unwrap. Give them a gift card. That's what he probably wants anyways. That's what she probably wants anyways. We begin to miss out on the intentionality, the symbolism, the deep meaning. The wise men brought these meaningful, intentional gifts. And while gold is obviously incredibly valuable, healing ointment wasn't necessarily the most valuable thing. It didn't cost massive amounts of money, but they were symbolic and meaningful, and they meant something. And so what does it look like for us to slow down enough to give gifts that are meaningful? And I recognize that a lot of us are maybe finished their shopping. How many people still have shopping left to do this week? You still got a couple people to pick up? Okay. Well, you know what? The first service people are already done. Probably because they're early risers. You guys are rolling into church late. You're shopping for your gifts late. You guys got to pull it together. No, I'm just kidding. I got to shop a little bit too. But so many of us, we have already gone down the rabbit hole. I get it. So many of us have already spent money, and I'm not suggesting you return all of them, but maybe. I'm just saying. But can we be intentional? Can we realize that the stuff that I want to give or the stuff that I feel obligated to give, the money that I am spending or that I have spent, that alone does not mean anything. It doesn't define who I am as a gift giver, and it doesn't necessarily communicate any sense of value or love or meaning to the person I'm giving it to. An item in and of itself does not hold that type of meaning. It doesn't hold that type of value. We become so focused on the things that we want to buy for others that we start to miss out on actual time with others. We become obsessed with checking items off the list. We purchase the things, and then we're going to carry an additional level of stress and carry an additional side hustle to be able to pay it all off over the next few months. We're missing out again on the people that really matter most. And again, I'm not suggesting we don't buy gifts, just that we slow down and we be intentional. Sometimes spending less doesn't mean spending nothing. There's a passage in 2 Corinthians. It's not actually about Christmas. And it's not about these types of gifts, but it is about giving. And I think it overlays really well. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, it says, God will generously provide all that you need. And then you will always have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others. As the scriptures say, they share freely and they give generously to the poor. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. For God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and then bread to eat. In the same way, he will provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. Yes, you will be enriched in every way so that you can always be generous. And when we take your gifts to those who need them, they will thank God. So two good things will result from this ministry of giving. the needs of the believers in Jerusalem will be met, and they will joyfully express their thanks to God. Now, again, this isn't about Christmas gifts. I get that. I'm not trying to make this about something that it's not about. But I think that it illustrates a couple things that maybe we really need to internalize and hold on to. The first of which is that you have been given what you need. You already have it. You may want more. I want more. Let's be honest. But you have been given what you need. Your Heavenly Father has given you and is giving you what you need. And sometimes it's a tangible thing. Other times it's seed that we begin to plant. And then we get to turn that into bread to eat. It shows up in many forms, but we have been given. And if I can just take a little bit of creative freedom here, I would say that this may just be a reminder that you don't need to go into debt to give something else. Because not only have you been given what you need by God, but also it seems like he's given you a little bit extra. Plenty left over to share with others. Plenty left over to share. And do you know what the most generous gifts are? In Scripture, what Jesus pointed out as the greatest gift was the widow who gave the one coin that she had, because she gave almost all that she had. It's not actually about quantity. It's not dollar amounts and all that kind of stuff. And I get that some people think that it is. And just because that is kind of what we have become used to believing doesn't mean we have to operate in that arena. You have been given what you need. And you have enough to be able to give others. And the gifts that you give to others can, and I would suggest, should lead them somehow to expressing thanks to God. Now, I've never given anybody a Christmas gift and had them break out into a worship song. So that's not what I'm saying. But if we can rewind a little bit, and we can just begin to kind of unwrap, no pun intended, a little bit of like the idea of gift giving and what it makes us feel. When I got that drum set, when we get these meaningful gifts, it causes us to experience something internally. It caused me at 11 years old, and I may not have been able to articulate it this way, but it caused me to feel known and seen, and like something that I was passionate about is recognized, and there was some sort of value inside of that. And it wasn't necessarily the gift. It was what the gift meant for me. And so there is this part for us that as we give gifts, what would it look like for the gifts that we give to have some sense of meaning that allow a person to feel fully alive or fully known or seen, that allow a person to feel this sense of recognition, like this person gets me, they know me, they see me. And a lot of times we just assume that the expensive gift will equal them feeling known and loved. And that's just not always the case. Maybe not even most of the time. And so what would it look like for us to recognize that I have what I need? I also am able to give gifts generously out of what I already have without going into debt, and to be able to give gifts in a way that cause people to feel seen and loved and recognize that they matter, that they are valuable. This is what the Magi brought Christ. Meaningful, symbolic gifts. And the gifts that we give should have some impact on people's hearts and minds. Now, let me be very clear, because I don't want to get any sarcastic Instagram messages. We will also stuff our kids' stockings with chocolate coins and pencils with their names on. Not every gift is going to be deeply meaningful and symbolic, but when we fall into this trap of believing that this is how I show love, or this is how I feel worth, or this is how I communicate their worth, we're missing it. I wonder if there's a way for those of us that are still shopping, as well as those of us that may have finished our shopping, that we can be intentional this year, communicate a depth of love and value. My challenge for you and for I this year, and something maybe that you have to do over the next couple days, because I know a lot of family gatherings are going to be starting soon, is I would love for you to think about each person on your Christmas list, the people maybe in your immediate family, your chosen family, some of those people that are most important to you, the people that you feel the most pressure to get them a good gift. And I want us to take time to write 5 specific, detailed things that you love and you appreciate about that person. It could be an attribute of who they are. It can be a part of their personality. It can be something that you've seen them do or work towards or accomplish this past year. It could be an affirmation. I mean, it could be any number of things. But intentionally communicating 5 things about these people and saying, and this is something that I see in you. This is something that I love about you. This is something I'm grateful for because of you. I mean, if you add this onto any gift, it is going to be a meaningful gift. What does it look like for us to believe and to remember that the love that we have, that we begin to open up and express towards the people around us, that will shape them more than anything, even a gift card? That will have a bigger effect on them than anything, to be this type of intentional gift giver. If you want to take it a step further, for those of you that are still shopping, or maybe you plan on shopping ever again, there's 5 other things. I pulled these from a website called The Advent Conspiracy. Ask these 5 questions. What kind of company am I supporting if I purchase this product? Can I afford to spend this amount? Which is funny that has to be on a list of questions we should ask ourselves, but we all do. How many presents do I actually need to buy? What did we do with all of the presents from last Christmas? And what did I learn from my spending habits last year? And instead of just mindlessly adding things to our Amazon carts and just going through the stores and grabbing whatever we can, what would it look like for us just to be intentional, not only with the things we purchase, but also with what we have already been given and how we extend that to others? Gift giving is not just a reflection of the wise men, but also of the greatest gift giver. In John 3:16, which most people don't associate as a Christmas verse, tells us that God so loved you and I that he gave his one and only son. And there's this aspect for us that the reason why it feels good to give gifts is because we were made in God's image, and God loves to give good things to his children. So you look at the creation poem and the beauty and the goodness. I was just talking with my son, it was probably a month ago or so, and I don't remember how it came up, but I was just like, isn't it so crazy that God chose to allow us to taste things? Like, we don't actually have to taste food, you know? He could have made us 1,000 different ways, but he made us in a way that we get to taste things. Get to taste carne asada. I mean, God is good. And I'm serious. He is such a good, loving father, and he wants us to experience goodness. And the times that we are most separated from goodness is the times when we're trying to do things our own way, and we get out of the flow and the rhythms and the way that God created us to be able to exist, and we try and force square pegs into round holes and all these different types of things. What would it look like for us to recognize that I get to extend a gift, and maybe that gift has some sort of financial implications, and maybe it doesn't? But that doesn't have to define how important this person is or who I am. This is the invitation that we have this Christmas. Let's pray together. Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.